Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. Today on ID the Future, we hear the second half of Eric Metaxas' talk at the January 2019 Dallas Conference on Science and Faith. He's continuing his discussion on what he calls the old narrative, that the more science we know, the less there's a need for God. That narrative is decades behind the times, he says, and it needs updating for two reasons that he especially emphasizes here today. First, there's everything we keep learning about how finely tuned our universe is for life. Second, and just as important, people are hungry for this kind of information.
So one of the things that I discovered is that God is real and that he's active today, not just in fine-tuning creation as it moves along. I was aware that God is active today even before I heard the term Cambrian explosion, right? And I thought that might get a laugh. So the fact is that when I realized that, I realized that there's such thing as miracles. God does miracles. And I have actually experienced a few genuine miracles. I don't mean like a blessing. I mean like a miracle where you go, wow, that is insane. That is insane. God is real. That just happened. Now, not everybody's experienced them. I've experienced just a few. So one day I'm talking to a publisher, pretty secular, and as a way of kind of witnessing to him about my faith, I tell him one or two of these miracle stories. He then says to me, "You got to write a book about miracles." I thought, "Well, I don't want to write a book about miracles." But he was so excited hearing this. He's like, "You're the guy. You got to write a book about miracles." So at some point, literally after a year, he kind of convinced me maybe I should do this because, again, in the culture, you get books usually by Christians about miracles that are a little too religious and they kind of take miracles for granted to the point that they shouldn't. Or you get a kind of a secular worldview that says the whole idea of miracles is idiotic, right? So I thought I'd like to kind of write something in between that has a proper wonder of the concept of miracles. So in the course of writing this book, it dawned on me that, you know what? The biggest miracle of all is this crazy thing called the fine-tuned universe, which most people that I know have never heard of. They've never read Hugh Ross. They've never read John Lennox. They've never read, there's some people here who've written books on that subject. They never heard of that. And most people that I know in churches, serious Christians, have never heard of any of this stuff. And I thought, okay, as a popularist, as somebody who can understand this stuff, I've read this stuff, I want to put it out there. So I'm going to write a couple of chapters in the miracle book about the fine-tuned universe, that the biggest miracle of all is the creation out of zip of the entire universe as we know it and all the details around that. That is, when you look into it, if you can really begin to appreciate it, it will freak you out. It is scary. It's really scary because you start appreciating that every breath you take is, I mean, it really can make you a little self-conscious. So I thought, let me put that in the book. So I put it in the book, and then there's other miracles and so on and so forth. And then when the book comes out, my book, Miracles, the publisher says, well, I hope you can write an op-ed or something like that. Maybe we can sell to a paper, and they'll help sell books or get some attention to the book. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to write an op-ed on my book Miracles, I got to write on this fine-tuned universe stuff. This is the miracle. It's the miracle that makes the parting of the Red Sea look like something done by a child. So I wrote a piece with the title, Is Science Leading Us to God? Now, I want to say that my Miracles book, some of you heard about Socrates in the City last night. I just want to interrupt myself to let you know that you can get the hardcover of the book for $5 from the Socrates in the City website. If you just go to Socrates in the City, you can get the hardcover for it's just a beautiful book, and I want to let you know that. But you can imagine we're not making money on that, right? We want to get the book out there. But I decide to write this piece. So I write an op-ed, Is Science Leading Us to God? And I think, who's going to publish something like this? Maybe, you know, FoxNews.com might publish it. I really don't know. But I wrote it, and I thought, well, the first place, of course, you got to start at the top just in case they might take it. Yeah, you know that they won't, but it would be wrong not to send it. So I sent it to the Wall Street Journal. Now, the weird thing is, it just so happened, and, you know, this is maybe not in the realm of miracle, but it struck me as at least fascinating that I just bumped into somebody at a Socrates in the City event who is one of the editors at the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. I'd never had a connection at the Wall Street Journal, whatever, and so I sent this to that person, and they published it. They changed the title to "Science Increasingly Makes the Case for God," so a little too on the nose for me. I wanted it to be a little bit more like, see what you think. But they published it. They published it in the online version, I guess it was Christmas Eve, I think, or Christmas Day, I don't remember, and then it was in the paper the next day. Well, my daughter and wife and I were driving up to Vermont to go skiing because we don't have Utah or Colorado on the East Coast. And as we're going up, the Wall Street Journal online still would tell you like how many Facebook shares or whatever. Like you could see the number on the article. And it was funny because Tim Keller, who was the pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian in New York City, kind of a big deal. Some of you have read his books. He'd been profiled or written something in the Wall Street Journal, and he had his article had reached 15,000 Facebook shares. And I thought, wow, I wonder how many this article is going to get. I'm just, you know, you always want to know. You want some metric, something to see. Is anybody reading this, you know? So as we're driving up, I'm obviously driving, can't look at my phone. But my daughter, every now and again, tells me, like, well, he's up to 7,000 Facebook shares. I'm like, uh-oh, Tim Keller's in trouble. I'm breathing down his neck. He thinks he's such a big shot. I might be able to topple him. Let's see what happens. Well, by the time I hit the Massachusetts border on I-91, I believe we were tied with Tim Keller. Now, something inside me wanted to call him up and say, ha-ha. But I lost his number, and I know he might not appreciate the joke because he has no sense of humor. And he doesn't like people. I shouldn't say that publicly. That's not true. But I thought, this is weird. Like 15,000 Facebook shares on an 850-word piece that tells you about the fine-tuning of the universe. Now, keep in mind, I am not a scientist. I read books by scientists. And I knew that most people, including most Christians, had never heard of these scientists, which is a scandal itself. If we lived in a normal culture, all of those scientists would be as popular as Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye the Science Guy. I mean, we just live in an insane world where that point of view is put out constantly, and you never even hear the other side, which happens to be true. Not only does the other side happen to be true, but it has such a sick level of evidence that it's not like, it looks true. It's a slam dunk. It's like, was Abraham Lincoln a historical figure? What's your point of view? Well, there's always going to be somebody who says we didn't land on the moon in July of 1969, but those people are properly known as, you know, lunar landing deniers, right? I just made that up. But the point is, there are some things that are so clear through the evidence that to take the opposite point of view is a joke. So you can say, I'm not sure if Jesus existed historically, right? Now, that is pretty ridiculous based on the evidence we have today, but there's still people who kind of believe that. But the evidence for Abraham Lincoln was like, you know, you wouldn't even have a conversation with that person. The evidence for what I write about in my little article is so overwhelming that it's just insane. It's bizarre. It ought not to be possible that there's that much evidence for the fine-tuned universe and for the God who created it ought not to be possible that that is so overwhelmingly true. But the reason that is true, so you're tracking, is that as science has progressed, now again, this is the counter-narrative, this is crazy, We've always been hearing this idea that the more science we know, the less there's a need for God, right? Now that we know where thunder comes from, we don't believe that God is up there throwing lightning bolts. Well, you know, Christians never believed that anyway. We didn't believe in Zeus. But the point is that a lot of people who don't understand the Bible think that that's where God comes from, right? So the narrative is the more science we know, the less there's a need for God. That's obvious. Now, that's the old narrative, and nobody updates it. So I'm here to update it and to say that in the last 50-something years, the tide has turned so dramatically that it's a joke. The evidence for the fine-tuning of the universe and for a creator and all of that stuff, as Stephen Meyer has in his new book that's coming out, is not only overwhelming, but every single day it becomes more overwhelming. In other words, let's say in 1960, Carl Sagan says, we know that there are two necessary criteria for life to exist on a planet. It needs to be this far away from a sun and there's something else, whatever, and that's about it. And based on that and the number of planets that we think are in the universe, there's probably billions and billions of planets with life on them, right? That's the math. But then you find out that there's a third criterion for life that we just discovered scientifically, and then a fourth, and then a fifth, and then a sixth. And the more science discovers about the nature of matter, the nature of the universe, the more science understands every year that passed that there are more things necessary for life to exist. So at some point, you get 30 factors that rational scientists would agree are utterly necessary for life to exist on a planet. And at some point, because the number of planets is finite, and because you have to multiply, right? You're not adding up. You're multiplying that every time you add another criterion, it's like it increases the factor of the ability to say that how many planets might have life. And you start saying, well, it's not looking so good anymore. Now it looks like maybe there's 5,000 planets that have life. But if you are hoping that the universe arose from nothing, out of nothing, and that there's no God, you're still saying, well, 5,000, that's a lot. But the problem is, the more science discovered, the more criteria were found to be necessary. And it got to be so many of those as the years passed. Now, the news is not tracking on this. Time Magazine's not doing an article on this. But as the years pass, people like Hugh Ross and John Lennox and others start saying, folks, there ought not to be one planet in the universe that supports life. Think about what I just said. In other words, suddenly the existence of life is conceivably mathematically possible, but it doesn't really make sense that there is a planet that supports life, because there is so much necessary. It's like having, you know, 200 dials on the wall behind me, and if any one of them is a millimeter off, the universe doesn't exist. Not life doesn't exist, the universe doesn't exist, right? Okay, well, imagine that we add another 10 dials to the 200, and then we add another 10 dials. Every year that passes, science is discovering more and more and more about the nature of the universe, and it's working against the hypothesis that life arose randomly. So you eventually reach a point where not only are the odds that maybe there's one planet, mathematically speaking, but it goes in the opposite direction. The odds start working against there being any planet, and then the odds against there being any planet increase and increase and increase and increase and increase till you get to the point where you say the odds are septillion to one that there should be a single planet based on everything we know necessary that might support life. And so it's like what Stephen said yesterday. Jim Carrey says, oh, you mean then there's a chance? Yeah, septillion to one. Then there is a chance. And I still can sleep with my girlfriend. Hallelujah. Right? Well, that's the story. The Wall Street Journal, you know, I don't know how I got around the firewall, But the article got published, and it promptly went insane. By the time we were settled into our hotel in Vermont, it was not just passing Tim Keller's 15,000 Facebook shares, it was at 100,000 Facebook shares. And you can imagine, yes, who knew that anything good could come out of Facebook, which is evil and fascist, but we'll talk about that another time. So, no joke, folks, it went over the course of the next couple of weeks, quote-unquote viral. It went to well over 300,000 Facebook shares. And somebody who's an editor at the Journal emailed me and said, by the way, I know off the record that if it is at that level, it is literally the most popular article in the history of the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. And it kept going. And it's now at something like 650,000 Facebook shares. It is more than double of any article that they have ever had shared. So the question is, why is it so popular? And most of us know, it's my writing. Obviously, I wrote it, and it's just that good. But there are other factors. And here's the other factor. And this is at the heart of what we're talking about. There is a hunger in the world for this kind of information. Most people who don't self-identify as scientistic, materialistic atheists, because when you're hanging out in the scientific universe, like, those people exist. But in the real world, there are very few people who have that worldview. There are a lot of people that haven't thought through what they actually believe, and they're kind of grooving on the rubble of the confused culture. And even those people are open to truth and kind of feel like it doesn't make sense that science and faith are at odds or that there's no meaning to my life. So they're hungry for this.
That was the second half of a talk given by author Eric Metaxas at the Dallas Conference on Science and Faith in January 2019. You can find the first half of the talk by searching for Eric Metaxas at idthefuture.com. That's Metaxas, M-E-T-A-X-A-S. And you can find his book on miracles, what they are, why they happen, and how they can change your life at Amazon.com. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.